Well, I'm reminded of a conversation we had back in June with Dr. Alan Hamilton. He was a Harvard-educated brain surgeon who talked about his experiences with spirituality and the supernatural and how they manifested themselves in the lives of medical patients. It was fascinating. And it's the same sort of thing here, talking with Dr. Bernard Haich, an astrophysicist, about spirituality and the God theory and how he comes to an understanding of the divine and the relationship with human beings from a purely scientific viewpoint. And others yet want to challenge him on that. You'll hear that coming up this hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, your questions and comments for Dr. Bernard Haich. Let's start with the first time caller line, Rod. Is in Ann Arbor, Michigan on Coast to Coast AM. Rod?
Yes. Dr. Haich, are you familiar with Roger Penrose's ideas on quantum coherence taking place in microtubules in living cells and how he relates that to consciousness?
I'm just mildly aware of that. I've never looked at it in any detail, but I know just the basics.
Yeah, it's very interesting. He makes a darn good case for it. And, of course, Penrose is a very well-known physicist, mathematical physicist. He worked with Hawking for, 12 years or so?
Yes, he's a brilliant guy.
Brilliant, yeah. And his book, Shadows of the Mind, he builds up a very good case for this. Quantum coherence and microtubules and living cells and relating that to consciousness when quantum coherence is taking place over portions of the brain or a portion of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate that, Rod. And so if you were going to define quantum coherence, Dr. Haich, how would you define that?
Well, I guess I'd rather not get into that aspect of it because I'm not familiar enough with the work to make something to get on the air and talk about it to millions of people without informing myself better in advance.
Mark is in Livermore, California on Coast to Coast AM. Mark?
Good morning, Ian. Very fascinating. I have to agree that there has to be a God theory in there somewhere because the Big Bang couldn't have happened without something out of what we know as physics. At this point, I mean, it couldn't start from nowhere. But my question, basically, as I put to your call screener, was where does evil fit into this? I mean, you've discussed the fact that reincarnation, people moving on to a higher plane. But do you feel there is an evil out there somewhere that, manipulates people's lives or whatever?
A sentient evil force of some sort. Ascension.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Dr. Haich?
No, I really don't believe in any kind of an active evil force. However, I do think that the origin of evil is it's possible to understand in the following way. In order to have experience, in order to have a physical experience, you have to have opposites. You need light to experience darkness, heat to experience cold, and so on. So you can't have experience without opposites. So this whole physical realm that we live in is a realm of polarity. By polarity, I mean opposites of all sorts. I think the ultimate source of this is a being without any polarity, a being that's absolute perfection, a being that's absolute bliss, a being that lives outside of space and time. But to have experience, you have to have this polarity, this existence of opposites, or else you can't have a physical experience at all. Now, unfortunately, we also have free will. And so if you put together free will with the possibility of, with the necessity of having both good and bad, some of that bad can unfortunately deteriorate into evil. And not all bad is really evil because, for example, when we take a shower in the morning, we kill all sorts of cells and bacteria that go down the drain, and we have to do that to stay alive. That bad thing that we're doing is not really bad at all. It's just necessity of living in a physical world. Unfortunately, when you take the free will and combine that with the necessity for some bad to be part of existence, then you can drift off into evil, and that's unfortunate.
London is in Santa Cruz, California, for Dr. Bernard Haich, astrophysicist and author of The God Theory. London?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Haich. Quick story, quick question. Okay, so as someone who has summoned UFOs who have probably been angels or something, you know. For me, the strangest thing that ever happened was one day I knew it was a synchronicity. I knew I had to go to the library. I knew once I found this book, this was the book I had to find. And I found this phrase in the book called Deus Ex Machina, which basically means God from the machine. You could look into more of that. You're probably familiar with it. But it was the dictionary.com word of the day that day. It was Deus Ex Machina, God in the machine, of all the words, you know, and of all the things to find. But my basic question to you is how you feel about such things as programmed reality or holographic universe theory and such like that. I mean, do you believe there could
be? Right. Let's get an answer to that. Go ahead, Dr. Hayes.
There were a couple of things mentioned. One was the Deus Ex Machina, which is simply basically a theatrical term. When God comes out of the machine, as kind of a magic solution to things. But then there was a question about
program theory.
Program theory. I don't know what that is.
Okay. Program reality?
Again, I don't know what that is, unless you mean that we are, you know, we're sort of creating our own little worlds here in cyberspace with all the games that we devise and all the other things that you can do online. So in a sense, we're creating a programmed virtual reality that lives inside computers. But whether that has anything substantive to tell us about ourselves, you know, as human conscious beings, I don't know. I don't see it right now.
Yeah, the Deus Ex Machina thing is very interesting. If I don't think I've ever actually seen it in a play, but I mean I've read about it, especially back in sort of the Greek Roman theater, where they would have these complicated plots going, and then at the end, sort of drop down this god machine, so to speak, that would sort of dole out fates, right? It would just be like, and this person ended up going with that person, and this bad thing happened to that bad person, and this is how it all ended, the end.
Right. Or even Superman comes flying along and solves everything.
Right, or just comes along and just says, okay, here we go, and here's the ending, and that's how it ends. It is interesting. I think people do think in terms of that in their own God theory, to have a kind of Deus Ex Machina model. But that's not what you're talking about at all.
No, it's not, because in my view, God doesn't interfere in the world. He doesn't micromanage the world. Rather, he lets things happen. He creates the boundary conditions. He creates the laws, and then lets things go off and run on their own, because that's the point of it. If he were to intervene, in a sense, he would be defeating his own plan.
And that's kind of in the Masonic view, the deists' view of God as the clockmaker God that wound the clock, built the clock, wound the clock, and then occasionally maybe coming in to occasionally sort of rewind the clock a little bit, but doesn't change the mechanisms at all.
That's right, but not because he doesn't care, but rather because to intervene would be to basically destroy the plan, which is to let things arise of their own accord, something new and novel. Because if this infinite being has infinite abilities and infinite intelligence of everything, then just to create something for the sake of creating and having it be controlled by him would be sort of futile. Rather, I think creating a universe to let things develop on their own, that is the point of the whole creation.
From your astrophysical view, what's the purpose of prayer?
Well, you see, I think that since we, in my view, share the consciousness of the Creator, and the Creator is a creative being, almost by definition, prayer is a way to do two things. It's a way to focus our own creativity, and it's a way then to also try to connect with the ultimate consciousness, which is the same as ours. And so I see those two purposes to prayer, both to sort of activate our own creative potential and to try to communicate with the ultimate source of the very same consciousness that we have ourselves.
David is in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, on Coast to Coast AM on a wild card line for Dr. Bernard Hayes. David?
Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Doctor. I kind of always have said that God is this ball of energy and light, like burning magnesium, and that it gives off so much light, but it's with religion has been covered with coats and coats of ritual that adds on to ritual and generation after generation until the light is almost diminished and little specks of light come out as small everyday miracles. And that's been my theory for years, and some have agreed with me. Anyway, I'd like to know if the doctor feels that perhaps some of the child prodigies who demonstrate miraculous talents, and if it's reincarnation or not, could there also be a negative aspect to it of possession, as well as my comment, Ian, that the swine flu vaccine is now on the Drudge Report, reported in the London Daily Mail, that 25 deaths have been associated with the vaccine itself, and that's been discussed on Coast to Coast.
Right.
People should read it and
interesting
congressman and go against mandatory vaccination, which is coming.
Well, it too, David, if you read down that article, it too is a theory. It's believed to be linked, and that's discussion among scientists of whether or not it is linked. But I think that's a fair thing to question. But let's go back to what he was saying in his primary point there, Dr. Hayes.
Right, his comment about the autistic savants.
Yeah,
I do have something to say about that. Aldous Huxley wrote a book in the mid 1950s called The Doors of Perception, and in it he described his experience with mescaline. And he took the drug in the 1950s and then wrote about it. And he tried to describe what he encountered when he was in that state. And the state, of course, is very different than what he experienced in ordinary life. And the words don't really exist to describe what he felt, but he tried. But his theory was that what the drug did was to basically crack a mental filter, so to speak. He saw this mental filter as being responsible for letting through a tiny bit of the consciousness that we have, but filtering out most of it, because if we were fully aware of the universal consciousness of everything, we couldn't live everyday life. And so he viewed the brain as not being the source of ideas and thoughts, but rather kind of a filter between us and universal consciousness that knows everything, and it filters out what we don't need in everyday life. And this brings me to the autistic savants, because they too can do amazing things, and yet at the same time they seem to have, in most cases, you know, some kind of brain damage. So in a sense, you could interpret their situation as being one in which their filter is also cracked in a way, and therefore they have access to what Huxley would have described as a universal consciousness that lets them do the amazing things that they can. For example, Leslie Lemke was an autistic savant who played Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1 after a single listen without benefit of any piano lessons. Now, I would not think a human being could do that, and yet he did. So he was channeling something rather, that some ability or other from somewhere that is very difficult to understand, except in terms of accessing some form of consciousness that is out there to be had, except that we filtered out in everyday life because we couldn't live if we didn't.
Yeah, it's sort of way of maybe by comparison that each of us, our normal consciousnesses are 6 inches deep and a mile wide, but a savant might be 6 inches deep, 6 inches wide and a mile deep.
Right, right.
And that if you hit that one pocket, it's almost unfathomable that somebody could hear something like that one time and be able to turn it back. But if one's consciousness isn't being spread over a wide area, but is focused in one particular thing, what we might all be capable of. Carla is in Tallahassee, Florida, on Coast to Coast AM. Carla?
Hey. Good morning, y'all.
Morning.
I have a question about animals and their consciousness. I had a pet that passed on recently, and I mean, do those animals? What do they in the universe? You know, do they have a consciousness like we do, or do they survive after death?
Dr. Hayes.
Well, you ask tough questions. I really don't know. My only experience is with a pet turtle. We have a pet turtle called Pogo, and she's very cute, but there's not a whole lot of consciousness there. But in terms of what the animals, what kind of consciousness they have, I would assume it is the same as ours, except in a much more limited sense. And perhaps there is an evolution going on. I mean, perhaps someday that animal consciousness of my pet Pogo will wind up, you know, in a higher species, maybe a dog. Maybe eventually we'll become a full-fledged human being. I don't know. I tend to think the trend is always upward. I don't think that you can wind up coming back as an animal if you are already a human being. But who knows? The progression may be through the animal kingdom up to us. But as to what they experience and feel, I really wouldn't know myself.
Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut, on Coast to Coast AM. Bill?
Yes, hi, Dr. Hayes. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. I'm an amateur astronomer, so I understand where you're coming from. I'm also an atheist, and I want to say two quick points leading to one question. Point number one, another astrophysicist who you may be aware of, Dr. Victor J. Stenger, S-T-E-N-G-E-R, wrote a book which I have in my hand now, God, the Failed Hypothesis, How Science Shows That God Does Not Exist. That's by Dr. Victor J. Stenger, S-T-E-N-G-E-R. Point number two is about the space probe, which I know you know about, Planck. It's a European space mission that's in space now in orbit around the sun, was launched in May. It's going to start getting data this month. And within a year to 2 years from now, we'll have information about the Big Bang as Planck dissects the cosmic microwave radiation left over from the Big Bang. We'll know, number one, possibly what happened before the Big Bang, as well as if there are infinite universes, the multiverse theory. In other words, because there might be gravity waves embedded in the Big Bang. So what I'm saying is, shouldn't you wait until we get more data, like from this Planck satellite, to know for sure regarding the ultimate ideas of the origin and evolution of the universe, if there really is a creator of the universe or not?
Well, of course, you can always wait. Back to your first point, I know about Victor Stenger. I know about his book. And I have not read that book, but I did read the book by Sam Harris, The Letter to a Christian Nation. And by the way, I thought I would read that book and be rather annoyed at some of the, you know, the anti-God statements that he makes. But in fact, I was cheering for him as I read the book, because he pointed out so many obviously absurd things in the Bible that, you know, I was rooting for him by the time I was rooting for him as I read the book. The point about atheism is that being an atheist requires that you have a certain God towards whom you are an atheist. And, you know, there are certain perceptions of God that I would consider myself an atheist against. Certain types of God that you might conjecture that would cause me to say, yes, I don't believe in that kind of God at all. As for the Planck satellite, yes, I'm familiar with it. I don't see how it's going to detect anything that would tell us about what happened prior to the Big Bang. Its job is to measure the microwave background very precisely to determine what the distribution is of clumpiness in the early universe. And I'm not familiar with anything having to do with evidence for what would have come before the universe was originating in the Big Bang, because I'm not aware of what you'd measure to do that.
Bill, if Dr. Hayes is supposed to reserve judgment on the existence of God until more data is in, why don't you reserve judgment on the non-existence of God?
Let me give you, I was waiting for that question. The God of the Bible or the Quran, in other words, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, those kind of mystical gods that were created by man thousands of years ago when we knew nothing about the universe, the cosmos, or our planet. Those are crazy, insane gods of the Bronze Age. If you want to talk about the God that Dr. Hayes is talking about, that's some possibility. I would consider that possible, but not the Israeli or Judaism, or Christianity, or Islamic irrational gods, mystical gods.
It would have to be a scientific God, because it would have to be, in other words, again, once more, in order for you to believe in a God, the God would have to be like you, except bigger and speaking with a deeper voice.
No. A God that is compatible with the scientific method. And
exactly. Because you are a scientific person, that could be the only type of God there could be. So you're doing exactly what it is that you complain about other people doing. Primitive people, you say, had a primitive God. You are a scientific person. You want a scientific God. And the difference between you two is what? Always interesting, Bill. You're always welcome to call. We'll go back to your questions, your comments for Dr. Bernard Hayes. The book is The God Theory. As an astrophysicist, he looks at any number of different scientific theories, including multiverses, and comes back to a belief in a divine intelligence. We'll get more on that coming up, because there was a story on the website at coasttocoastam.com. Didn't get into it earlier. I'll save it to the end. And we'll ask Dr. Hayes about that coming up on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Last half hour for Dr. Bernard Hayes. I've enjoyed this very much. I hope you have too. If you have Streamlink, of course, you can always go back and listen to it, share it with others. If you have Streamlink, too, you can share coming up this Tuesday night. I'll be doing the chat for George. He gets a chat night off, so let's call it Chatterday this coming Tuesday, and I'll be online. at coasttocoastam.com doing the chat just for the StreamLink subscribers. So if you're a member, hope you get a chance to stop by and exchange some Q&As. And those tend to fly back and forth pretty rapidly. It's a pretty good time that I love doing it whenever I get a chance. And thank you, Lex, for letting me do it again. The blog is up, too, and there's some great links there at coasttocoastam.com. If you go take a look at that, including a link to this story about the disappearing salmon and one possible suspect for that. It's a great photo of a grizzly bear taken by a friend of mine just last week in Alaska. And back for your questions and comments next. For Dr. Bernard Haish, the book is The God Theory. You can link up to him through the website as well, coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Ponet. Sherry is in Scottsdale, Arizona on Coast to Coast AM for The God Theory, Dr. Bernard Haish. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening. It's a pleasure to talk with you, Dr. Haish. I'm listening to you this evening, and it amazes me that everything you're saying I completely understand. About 5 years ago, I was fortunate enough to run across a gentleman. My entire life, you know, I was raised in a religious society like most of us have been, but I just knew deep within myself someplace that the whole theory they presented in the Bible, Quran, whatever you want to call it, was a complete manipulation. So I absolutely agree with you on that. But I was fortunate enough to, being in a health food store one evening, run across a flyer that was in there, and I called a gentleman. His name is Robert Detzler. Are you familiar with him at all?
No, I'm not.
He may be a man who might be of interest to you. I don't know. But he does what's called spiritual response therapy, and I had no idea what the heck that was at the time. I picked up the flyer, called a couple of months later, and, you know, asked him some basic questions about it, and he said basically it's clearing your past lives and the negativity and so forth, and I thought, oh, yeah, right. Well, he said, asked me a couple of questions. He did a clearing on me, and I didn't know when he did it or what it involved precisely. But the next day, I felt a definite shift, and apparently it was the next day when he did his actual clearing work. And I have since learned from that time, I completely understand that we are energy. We are spirits. I did not used to believe in reincarnation, and now I completely understand it, because if your spirit is unlimited and, is only here for a temporary period of time, there's no reason, he said, just think outside the box for a moment, that you cannot come back and reincarnate. And so, of course, I had many questions from that point on, but somehow I knew he was right. But I spoke to him more over the years and call him on occasion. But he introduced me to a couple of books to read to understand this a little better. And it goes right in tune with what you're saying. And it's so wonderful to hear that you're proving this, you know, scientifically.
Okay. Is there a question?
There is a question. Are you familiar and have you explored the superconscious mind at all?
I don't know exactly what that would mean.
The superconscious mind, in terms of this theory. Now, Sherry, do you want to explain superconscious mind real quickly?
Yes, superconscious mind basically being you have a conscious mind, a subconscious, and then what is called a superconscious that all of us are possess, which is that transition from our spiritual selves to our physical selves.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. You want to comment on that?
Yeah. Well, I guess, I think in many traditions you have this division of our human nature into three. In Huna, for example, my wife talks about Huna. You have a low self, a high self, and a conscious self. And so this notion that we are sort of three-part entities is one that I think you find in many traditions. And it makes sense to me. I wouldn't argue against it. But on the other hand, I don't really know what it means specifically.
Would you agree with Sherry's assessment that the Bible and the Quran and any religious writings are just manipulations?
Well, there's a lot of manipulation there and a lot of things in the Bible that, are absolutely absurd. I mean, for example, there's a quote that out of Deuteronomy that was in Sam Harris's book. But I looked it up, and it really is in Deuteronomy. Let me give you this quote. If a man discovers on his wedding night that his bride is not a virgin, he must stone her to death on her father's doorstep. Now, did God say that? I mean, if any kind of God said that, you can count me out as a believer in that God. I mean, I myself would be an atheist toward that kind of God. That's in the Bible. So there certainly are things in the Bible that are objectionable, and there are other things that are probably foolish, and there probably are some truths in there too. But in terms of being a an infallible word of God, I don't believe that.
I certainly would agree on that. Would you ever consider that, something like that is a snapshot of a time when people of faith were banding together in a community? And as absurd as that may seem to us now, that was a necessity for them to stay together and survive.
Well, that if they could be, but unfortunately, that same kind of stuff is still taking place today in the Middle East. It's not over with.
Derek is in Mississippi on Coast to Coast AM. Derek?
Good evening. Good to speak with you, Doctor. I was wondering where divine intervention comes into play in your God theory.
Is there ever divine intervention?
Well, in a sense, I think there is indirectly, because I think that we share our consciousness with God, and we are therefore creative beings. And so I think that together with God, we exercise our own creativity to try to make things happen. I think we can, to some extent, direct what happens in our lives through our own creative potential. And in a sense, we do that together with God because we share it, but it's really done on our side more, I think. But again, I'm just talking off the top of my head because I don't know this for certain at all, and I certainly haven't proven anything.
Gary is in San Diego on a wild card line on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Bernard Haish. Gary?
Yes, this is Gary. My question is, if extraterrestrial disclosure came, would it revolutionize and liberate our civilizations, or would we still be a government-controlled and taxed society? And I'll take my question off the air.
Interesting. Interesting. What do you think?
I don't have a clue. I mean, if they show up, if they land on the mall in Washington, will they be good or bad aliens? I don't know. I simply don't know the answer to that.
But knowing human nature, how do you think we would react to that? How would scientists react to that?
Well, this is interesting because as long as we are able to detect an alien civilization with a radio telescope, and they're nicely far away, so there's no chance of us getting together anytime soon, and it's all done using scientific techniques, that's okay. That's what scientists talk about when they have a few beers and they want to speculate about, what great things could happen under those circumstances. But for the aliens to come here and show up and, wind up in some position of superiority to us, I don't think that would go over very well at all with scientists.
Wouldn't that just be a crushing blow to their egos?
It wouldn't help the egos one bit. Yeah, crushing blow is perhaps a good way to put it.
That's probably but it's interesting to me that scientists, it would be like zoologists studying tigers from a distance and then actually, but being afraid of ever getting close to them. And yet that's what they're studying. So they study them from very, very far away when actually what they need to do is encounter them. And if they encountered them, it would change everything about their science.
Imagine the difference between us and a civilization that's a million years advanced. It's sort of like imagine an ant scurrying across my computer screen and I'm trying to figure out what my screensaver is doing.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Bruce is in Monterey, California on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Bernard Haish. Bruce?
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, this is an opinion, and I'll get a comment from you, too. I have always believed that science and religion prove each other. And my main example is this. In the late 1800s, a French doctor measured the weight loss of a human versus a animal at the death. The human lost between 12 to 14 pounds over 3 days. Animal, nothing. In the Bible, it states the soul of the animal is in God's hand. Now, Einstein's theory states that anything of mass or whatever would have weight, thus our loss of 12 to 14 pounds would be our soul. And probably in time, this is how scientists would finally decipher the difference between animal inhuman, being the fact that we would have the soul versus the animal.
That's an interesting way of looking at that. That if it's we're measuring mass, how could the mass go down in a human being but not in an animal if we're all carbon, you know, if we're all oxygenated carbon life forms?
I guess I would have to see the data on that.
Given its truth, and I don't have the data either, but if it's true, what does that say to you?
Well, first of all, I mean, it all hinges on whether or not it's true.
Right.
And I'm very skeptical that the spirit that we are, you know, the spiritual entity that we are that is inhabiting this body that we live in, whether that has any physical existence that can be measured in terms of weight, I'm skeptical of that. I guess in this case, too, I'd have to see the data before I take the notion seriously.
Francis is in the middle of Arizona somewhere on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Bernard Haish. Francis?
Good morning. What is your idea of God? Do you have a...
It's an idea that's been elucidated by Kabbalah, the ancient Hindu traditions. God is, I think, a being beyond space, beyond time, simultaneously greater than infinity and less than zero, a being of perfect bliss, a being of perfect joy and love, but unimaginable in terms of what it is because he is nothing. He is nothing and everything. That's how he is described in these traditions. But this God, I think, has infinite potential, and that potential is something that I think this being wants to realize, to experience. And so I think what this being does is to create universes like ours. Many of them, you know, can be very different at Mars, I suppose, but some of his potential becomes actualized in those universes. And the point of that is that he can then enter into the life forms that arise and experience what it's like to have that potential. Experience is a very different thing than potential. One is sterile and one is active. And I think that's the whole point of what we're doing here is we are God having an experience of physical reality because that's one of God's potentials.
Mary is in Hollandale, Florida on Coast to Coast AM. For Dr. Bernard Haish. Go ahead, Mary.
Good evening. I would like to find out if you or Ian or do you know of any of the other hosts that have read the book Urantia or has had a guest on explaining Urantia in the past since the program has been running?
I've seen the book. I've never read it.
What's your point?
It's 1,083 pages. So much of what you think God is in that book. And a lot of the things that you're not sure about are also in that book. And I would really love for you to read it. And I would love for the program to have someone on from the Urantia Foundation, which is in Chicago. That can give you the number.
We can find that
on the program.
I'm pretty sure we've done something with Urantia in the past. I haven't in my memory, but, you know, sometimes I look back over the list of guests that I've had and I've forgotten some of the cool people we've had on. So I'll go back and look at it, but I'm pretty sure that that's been covered before. But if not, we'll take a look at it in the future. And Fernando is in El Paso on Coast to Coast AM. Fernando?
Dr. Haish. I have been studying these kinds of things just out of curiosity for about 40 years, and I agree with the conclusions that you have reached on everything you've mentioned. And there's one thing that puzzles me, though. I was raised in a traditional religion, and the concept of free will, and I believed in free will. I still do, but I had an experience one time that makes me question it. I went to the public library to get a specific book on sales. I was just getting into sales and wanted to learn more about it. As I was walking through the stacks back to that section, I noticed out of the corner of my eye, in passing, the title on the binding of a book. But I only had a brief time to get the book I went to get, so I wasn't interested in anything else. But my feet, my legs stopped, and this little knowing, sometimes almost like a voice within me said, look at the book. And I silently answered back, and I said, I looked at it. I see the title. I'm not interested. I'm busy. I got to do something. I don't have time. And it said, take the book off the shelf. So I said, oh, all right. And I kept trying to move my feet, and they were just stuck to the floor. And so I picked the book up and looked in the dust cover where they have information about it, and nothing attracted my interest, and I tried to put it back on the shelf, and my arm froze in midair. And I said, I don't want it. I'm in a hurry. And the little voice said, check the book out. And just out of frustration, I said, oh, all right.
Right.
And I took it home with the other books I wanted. I read the other books, studied them, and then I took all the books back to the library, including this one that I hadn't even looked at.
Right.
I was standing at the checkout desk to check it in, and the little voice said, you didn't read that book. You still have a week time on it. And I said, okay.
Fernando, I'm so running out of time here, so I just want to get to the payoff. Of what was the book?
A Parenthesis in Eternity. That was my introduction to metaphysics.
Oh, very interesting.
But the question is, what about free will?
Okay. Dr. Hayes?
Well, I mean, I think you still have free will. You really could have not checked it out. You could have returned it. I think we tune into our creative consciousness, and we probably wind up telling ourselves things that we don't realize when we're just in our ordinary state, you know, that we should know or could do. So I don't see this as any great objection to free will.
Well, we have time for one last thing, and I've saved this from last hour. I thought it was interesting. It was on the website that this goes back to a couple of things you talked about, that there's a website that's set up in Australia, and people can link up to it through coasttocoastam.com, that will be beaming messages that people leave of no more than 160 characters at the Canberra Deep Space Communication Complex. And then you'll have to help me with this, is how this is pronounced. Gliese?
Gliese, yeah. He was an astronomer, and certain stars were named after him because of a catalog he compiled. Gliese. So, Wilhelm Gliese was his name.
A catalog, here it says, of all of these messages will be beamed. A planet 8 times heavier than our own is located 20 light years away in the constellation Libra. Is Gliese a planet that is likely to contain life?
You know, I don't know what the statistics, what the data on that planet are. Sorry.
That's okay. They say it's an Earth-like planet outside our solar system. I didn't know if you were familiar with it. All right. So if they receive this message in a bottle, right, cast out in the stars, what do you think they would send back to Earth? Dr. Hayes?
You're asking me to second guess the alien motivations and psychology and politics.
Yeah. What would they respond back to receiving this message in a bottle from?
Well, they could send the same message back to us. That's what was done in Contact. Remember when they got the message that was actually a television broadcast of the German Olympics in the 1930s?
Right.
That came back to us from Vega in the movie Contact.
So you think they just might say, stamp it received and send it back to us?
No, but that's the only thing I can think of saying at this hour of the night.
Well, okay, that's where we'll leave it. Dr. Bernard Hayes, thank you so much for entertaining all of our questions. And link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Good luck on the digital universe. Look forward to hearing more about that in the future.
Thank you very much.
Everybody else, enjoy your week. Deus Tiamat, and I do too.